There's a moment in most people's lives, usually when they're about a year old, when they taste for the first time ice cream. And their faces immediately register a combination of awe and delight. From then on, ice cream becomes a favorite food. Well, today on Please Explain, we're going to learn about ice cream in all of its many varieties and forms with Dr. Bruce Tharp, who holds a doctorate in dairy science and is an adjunct professor in the Department of Food Science at Penn State University. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Leonard. I'm happy to be here.
Didn't you grow up in a family of ice cream experts?
Yes, I did. My grandfather started an ice cream business in upstate Pennsylvania, and that's my first recollection of what I experienced.
That was Tharp's ice cream. Is it still being made?
No, it went the way of a lot of small businesses at the time. It merged with other companies, eventually lost its own identity, and faded from view.
I understand that your father, Wilbur Tharp, actually took the short course in ice cream at Penn State, where you now teach today.
Yes, that's correct. We celebrated the 100th anniversary of that short course in 1992 and discovered, as I expected, that he was the oldest living graduate at the time, and we recognized him for that distinction.
He had taken the course in 23. It was already an old course by then.
Oh, yes.
So ice cream has been around quite a long time in the United States. Do we have any idea of where it originated?
Well, ice cream originates in the dim pages of history. There are some early records, some of them apocryphal, some of them maybe true, but there's some record that Alexander the Great liked to have flavoring put on snow.
But is that ice cream or is that something else? Isn't that just flavored ice?
It was actually, yes, it was. It was flavored ice, perhaps most closest to what we now call snow cones. But then that evolved. Eventually, dairy products became part of what was added on to that. The Emperor Nero is said to have done that with snow that was brought down from nearby mountains. But the first, really, maybe the closest to ice cream comes in some records that indicate that Marco Polo may have brought back some recipes from China during his trips there.
The Chinese gave us ice cream and gunpowder.
Yeah, that's right, and many other things, too, that we're familiar with.
Are there certain requirements for something to be called ice cream?
There are standards of identity established by the Food and Drug Administration that call for that describe what ice cream is. This refers to both the composition in terms of the amount of fat and dairy products that are present, and the how much it weighs, which limits the amount of air that can be whipped into it.
So it has to have at least 10% milk fat and 10% milk solids?
Not fat, yes, that's correct.
And weigh no less than 4.5 pounds per gallon.
That is correct.
And that's the basic one. And then premium brands actually have less air?
Well, yes, the limitation on the amount of air refers to the maximum amount of air that's legally possible. It's possible to make ice cream with as low amount of air whipped into it as possible.
And people make it at home, and they make it fairly little air. You can make it with some pretty basic ingredients: cream, sugar, maybe eggs, maybe some fruit or chocolate. But little else.
That's where Thomas Jefferson and George Washington started.
So is there something, what makes it all gel together?
Well, the freezing process, for one thing, when the water freezes, it concentrates everything else into what is not frozen, makes it thicker and heavier, and things happen to the fat that provides structure and gives us that creamy, rich eating experience that we're very fond of.
Some ice creams use eggs, which I assume function as an emulsifier, and some don't. Are eggs the or substitutes the primary emulsifier, or is it the fat in the cream?
No, eggs are used in a specific type of ice cream, which we call French ice cream or custard style. In fact, it's a requirement that if you call an ice cream French ice cream or ice cream custard, that it have a minimum amount of eggs, 1.4% of egg yolks, to be specific. But the egg yolk provides a function which helps the fat provide more creaminess and enhances the perception of richness that's contributed by the fat.
Some brands list stabilizers in their ingredient lists. Do name brands vary the recipes for the packaged product as opposed to the stuff that they sell in their own stores? The stuff they sell in their own stores have fewer stabilizers?
Not necessarily. The function of the stabilizers, those various gums that appear on the ingredient list, is to control the growth of the ice crystals. Ice cream, one of the most damaging things that can happen to the quality of ice cream as it makes its way from the factory to your home freezer is its exposure to variations in temperature, which the industry calls heat shock. The effect of that is to make these ice crystals grow larger and provide a very an icy or a coarse texture to the product, and which is most people consider to be unpleasant. So the function of the stabilizer is to control those the growth of those crystals and keep the ice cream smooth until it reaches you, in spite of all of the abuse that it gets on its way to your freezer.
I'm talking with Bruce Tharp, who is a doctor in dairy science and also adjunct professor in the Department of Food Science at Penn State University. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Now, ice cream can be made at home. I wonder if it's made pretty much the same way commercially. It used to be that you hand-cranked something with salt and water surrounding the thing that the ingredients were put in. Is that pretty much the way it's done in big factories as well?
Yeah, essentially the principles are the same. There's something cold on the outside, and the mixture of ingredients, which the industry refers to as ice cream mix, is on the inside being agitated and freezing because of the colder temperature on the outside of this chamber. There are scraper blades in the commercial operation that scrape the ice off of the outside of that freezer as they form and make for the presence of very small ice crystals, which gives us the smoothness that we want. But essentially, the principles are the same. It's the transfer of heat out of the ice cream mix into the medium that surrounds it. As a result, the temperature goes below the freezing point of the ice cream, and it freezes. And it also is whipped at the same time because in a commercial operation, the ice cream mix, which goes into this chamber, has an amount of air mixed into it, and then that air is broken down into very small air bubbles, which also contribute to the richness and creaminess.
Isn't some commercial ice cream made using a cryogenic method?
Well, the cryogenic method refers to the production of a product that is made by dropping small beads of this ice cream mix into a very cold liquid like liquid nitrogen where the temperature is well under 100 degrees. These particles then freeze instantly. They're collected. And instead of being served as a solid mass, the serving of the product becomes one of these individual spheres, which are, you know, eighth of an inch or quarter of an inch in diameter. It's quite a different eating experience because in order to keep those particles have their same identity, it's necessary to keep the product very cold. So the eating experience of these kind of products is a very cold, much colder than conventional ice cream.
And the colder something is, the less flavor you get, isn't that true?
That's correct. The cold tends to anesthetize our taste buds and aroma perceptors and make it more difficult to taste it, yes.
Is low-fat or non-fat ice cream or tofu ice cream really ice cream?
Well, that's two questions. Tofu, a frozen food, which is defined as tofu, does not meet the standard of identity for ice cream because it does not contain the dairy ingredients that the standard of identity calls. So fanciful names are made for those products containing tofu, which are aimed at a small amount of the population who, for some one reason or another, cannot consume or don't want to consume dairy products.
Well, the low-fat, if I remember correctly, used to be called ice milk.
That's correct. Did
that change?
It changed in the 70s, during the period of the decade of the 70s and 80s, when we changed the standard of identity to allow for this product called ice milk, which was a product that contained less than that 10% minimum fat that you referred to earlier.
Now, what about ice creams in other parts of the world? Gelato is like ice cream, but it's kind of runnier and usually has more intensive flavor. Is it made all that differently?
It's made just about the same way, except that the final step that is applied to the ice cream that you buy in the supermarket or wherever and take home, that is of hardening it down to a very low temperature, that step is not applied to gelato. Gelato is usually served in a sort of a semi-soft state where it's displayed in these nice, attractive, long rectangular pans and scooped out by hand. And you're right, it's very brightly colored and fairly intensely flavored. But otherwise, the process is is the same. It's just that it's not packaged and going through this final hardening, what's called hardening in the industry.
Is American ice cream pretty much the same as French ice cream or Polish ice cream or Russian ice cream? I know English ice cream tastes very different for some reason, and I'm told that it's made with tropical oils.
Well, that's part of the product called ice cream in England. There's some of the product called ice cream in England is made with vegetable fats, and the most desirable vegetable fats to use in a product like that are these tropical oils that come from palm oil or palm kernel oil or coconut oil, something like that. If an ice cream in England is made from dairy products, it can be identified, or from containing milk fat, it can be identified as dairy ice cream. But the ice cream which is made with vegetable fat still has the non-fat components of milk, that is, the skim milk portion is there.
Now, what about sorbets and sherbets? Are they the same thing?
Sorbet and sherbets are different. Sherbets still contain some dairy products, but a much smaller amount. The standard of identity for sherbet requires that it contains no more than 4 or 5% total milk solids, about up to 2% fat, and the rest is the skim milk portion of milk. The rest of it is sugar and flavoring. Sorbets are like sherbet, except they contain no dairy products.
And actually, I prefer them. They seem simpler and more direct.
They are, yeah. Well, they're much easier to make. The ingredient list is much simpler. A sorbet is kind of an upscale version of what is another type of frozen dessert, which is referred to as a water ice. And a water ice, again, is just a sugar and water mixture, which is flavored and sometimes has some acidity in it if it's an appropriate flavor. The sorbets are often used the fruit concentrates for a source of their sweetener instead of just using straight sugars.
Now, my staff has brought in a number of things for me to do a taste test with. First, two vanilla ice creams. I'm going to taste the premium vanilla and a regular grocery store brand. And I'm told that I should look for uniformity and color. The first one I'm going to taste looks kind of pebbly, and the color is a little light.
Okay, that would be the regular the lower fat product.
Well, that's what it turns out. Yeah. I guess it does, because although it tastes perfectly fine, I'm not sure which one it is. It sure doesn't taste as rich as the other. And I'm going to look. They've given it to me blind. It's actually Breyers was the first, and Häagen-Dazs was the second.
Okay.
They both were quite nice, but you really can taste the difference. Is that because as far as I know, Breyers uses only natural ingredients, so is it really just a matter of the amount of air that's put into this?
That's a major difference. If you're speaking about the Häagen-Dazs, they use only what is referred to as natural ingredients as well. The Breyers product is distinguished from the Häagen-Dazs primarily by two things. One, it has somewhat more air whipped into it, and the level of fat is lower.
They're also melting differently. The Häagen-Dazs is melting quicker.
Well, for one thing, the presence of the higher amount of air in the Breyers product would tend to have an insulating effect and slow down the heat transfer. When you refer to melting, are you speaking of melting in your mouth or on the...
No, plate? No, I'm looking in the bowl, and okay. One is already sitting in a little pool of liquid, and the other one pretty much is not.
Okay, well, we have to be scientifically concerned about that, because we have to make sure that the treatment has been the same up to now, that they were both scooped out at the same time. If that's the case...
They were.
Yeah, okay, then you can attribute that to a difference in the product.
Now, I also, the second taste test is frozen vanilla frozen yogurt. How about frozen yogurt? How long has it been around?
Frozen yogurt was first introduced in the marketplace in the U.S., and that's where it began, in the late 70s. And at that time, it was a product which was intended to be relatively close to yogurt itself and actually represent a, quote, frozen yogurt.
And so was it, some people complained it was a little sour, didn't they?
Yes, people who didn't like yogurt were intrigued by the possibility that they might enjoy it more in the frozen form and were somewhat turned off by the fact that it still tasted like yogurt and had that sourness and the somewhat fermented flavor that you associate with yogurt. At the same time, they wanted to enjoy what was perceived as the health benefits of the yogurt, so they tried it. But then it didn't succeed in that form. And it had a reincarnation about 10 years later, where the resemblance to yogurt was much less, and there was much less of what you might say is yogurt in the product. In fact, it was marketed in many cases as tasting like ice cream and not tasting like yogurt.
Because they really were putting ice cream in it.
Because it had a lot of ice cream in it, yes. They were made usually by combining something like yogurt and the conventional ice cream mix.
Well, I've been given frozen yogurt and also something called slow-churned ice cream, and I took a taste of both, and I thought one was much too sweet and the other one was quite luscious. And then I peeked, and sure enough, the frozen yogurt was the one that I didn't like all. It tasted slightly chemical and much too sweet. But what is slow-churned? It really tastes quite delicious.
Well, slow-churned is the most recent development in the process itself of manufacturing ice cream. Not so much the composition, but the actual process of freezing and whipping it. And it goes beyond what used to be the conventional way to make ice cream by freezing the ice cream. The initial freezing of the ice cream before it's packaged is taken to a much lower temperature than conventional ice creams as one differentiation. And that produces very small ice crystals, which make the product smoother initially and stay smoother longer.
Even though it uses less fat?
Even though it uses less fat. Now, the advantage with respect to the less fat is related to the fact that this process, in addition to taking the ice cream down to a much lower temperature, processes it and agitates it while it's being frozen for a much longer time. So this additional working, since the term slow-churned, I suspect, produces a different structure with respect to the relation between the fat and the ice crystals, as a result of which the product tastes a lot creamier than it otherwise would, and in fact tastes a lot like a much higher fat content, which is the basis of the claim for that product. Half the fat, one-third fewer calories, but as good in eating quality as their conventional ice cream.
Well, they almost convinced me. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. My guest, Dr. Bruce Tharp, we're talking about frozen desserts here on Please Explain.
Is anything more delectable than ice cream? Why, even the most respectable eat ice cream. It's wonderful on a summer's afternoon in June. Ice cream, the recipe, something serious.
We're back with Dr. Bruce Tharp, who has a doctorate in dairy science and is an adjunct professor in the Department of Food Science at Penn State University. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Before we get to the calls, I understand that Holstein milk is most often used, although Guernsey cow milk may be preferable. What is the difference? Do cows really make milk, certain kinds of milks that work better for ice creams?
The reason that Holstein milk is used most frequently is because that's the milk that's produced in the greatest quantity in the United States, and the reason for that is because the Holstein cows produce much larger quantities than the other breeds, and that makes it more efficient and lower cost. The Guernsey milk is distinguished from Holstein by a major difference, which being the level of fat. The fat is more yellow. It's at a higher level. Otherwise, there's not a lot of difference between the two.
Now, we got a number of listeners writing in asking about gelato. One wants to know any tricks on making ice cream and gelato in a typical small home ice cream machine. Another wants to know why gelato is so much tastier and yet lighter than ice cream. And a third one also wants to know about the best ice cream, the home ice cream maker. Now, is gelato tastier simply because it isn't as cold, or are there other things that determine its, I guess, deeper taste?
Well, there are several factors involved. In the first place, yes, it is not as cold as the ice cream that you would consume coming out of your freezer. You know, you can assume that that ice cream is going to be at a temperature maybe 0 degrees, 5 degrees, no more than 10, as it comes out of the freezer, whereas the gelato is being held pretty much around, let's say, 20 degrees or so. Maybe a little less. So that warm, the greater warmness causes for a greater flavor perception. The flavors are released more quickly and they're perceived more quickly. It's called the flavor release, is very fast with gelato. It's also pretty generally so that the gelatos are flavored more intensely than regular packaged ice cream. So in making ice cream at home, that's the guide to follow.
Well, what about the ice cream makers? There are three kinds that you can get. There is the old-fashioned one where you put some ice and salt in a thing and then the canisters go around until they become ice cream. There's another kind where you put the canisters in the freezer overnight and then ice cream is made. And then there's a third kind, usually very expensive kind of machine, where it just seems to make the ice cream. I guess it has a built-in refrigeration system.
Yeah, that's exactly right. My own preference is for the third type you described because it's easier to do. It certainly is more expensive, yes, but and the results of the ice cream that comes out of them, out of those three, is not that much different. The kind with the compartment that you freeze first in the freezer will make it just as good of ice cream as the one that has its own built-in refrigeration system. It's just that you can't do it as often.
And
you have to wait for that canister to refreeze or have several canisters.
And make sure you have a really good freezer. I had a problem once where I did that, and nothing ever happened.
Yes, it has to be cold enough to freeze the ice cream, right?
Cecilia from Maplewood, New Jersey, how you're on the air.
Hi, I was just calling. I make a lot of ice cream and gelato at home. I have the cup one that just turns around that you put in the freezer, and I'm fond of that one. But the difference between gelato and ice cream, as far as I'm aware, is much different from just the serving temperature. The gelato, I think, gets most of its fat mouthfeel from egg yolks instead of the dairy fat that's, you know, ice cream does have eggs in it usually, but it has more of the fat from the dairy, whereas gelato has many egg yolks in it and not so much of the dairy fat. And it also has less air is beaten into it in the traditional processing, as far as I'm aware. I mean, that will increase the flavor. In addition, if you serve ice cream and gelato at the same temperature, the gelato will still taste and feel much different in your mouth because of the egg yolk. Isn't that... I mean, that's what I've found over the years. Is that not correct?
Okay, those are interesting comments, Cecilia. The fat in gelato is pretty much the same as the levels of fat that you find in ice cream. And again, it's difficult to speak specifically about gelato because there is no legal definition or legal requirement as to what the product has to be like in order to be called that. You can make almost anything and call it gelato. But most of the commercial gelatos with which I'm familiar have fat levels in the same range as ice cream, and they can be low fat or high fat. Eggs are used, but not to the point where it provides the dominant fat. If egg were used to provide a very large quantity of fat in a product like that, there would be a very strong eggy type flavor, which you don't see in a lot of these.
Thank you so much for your call. Karen from Brooklyn, hi, you're on Please Explain.
Hi, good afternoon. I wonder if you would explain exactly what semifreddo is and also what American soft serve is, the Carvel Dairy Queen type products.
I didn't hear the first term.
Semifreddo?
Yeah.
Do you know how semifreddo, is that an ice cream type product?
I'm not familiar with that term.
Ah, well, that...
Is this something in New York City?
Yes.
Okay, I'm not familiar with it.
Do you want to explain semifreddo, Karen?
It's an Italian type of ice cream, and it means half cold, and it has like a pudding consistency, much richer than American soft serve. I thought maybe perhaps the guest would be familiar with it.
But well, I suspect it's not made like... in the same way that soft serve is. But what is soft serve ice cream?
Well, soft serve ice cream is pretty much, the term says it all. It is ice cream that is served in the soft state as it exists in an ice cream factory when it's being filled into a package.
Well, they used to call it frozen custard, didn't they?
The term frozen custard was originally applied to it, but that was true custard where there were some egg products. That was the original form. That sort of morphed into the broader soft serve industry that's characterized by these stands that we see almost everywhere, where it's a relatively low-fat product. Generally, the fat level in these soft serve products will be somewhere less than 5%. But it's otherwise, it's very much like ice cream. It has less air whipped into it usually than the packaged ice cream as well. And it's served at a relatively low temperature, so it stays nice and stiff while you're eating it and doesn't melt before you consume it.
Robert from Manhattan. Hi, you're on Please Explain.
Hi, good afternoon. My daughter goes to Penn State, and on my first trip there, I tasted the ice cream at the creamery. And there are always long lines there, I've noticed. And I've never been able to get the same kind of taste in New York as I have in the creamery.
This is an endorsement for your product, isn't it?
Oh, it sounds great. I'm all for you, Robert. Go Penn State.
Because, I mean, it's incredible how good it tastes, how fresh it is. Could you tell me a little bit as to what gives it that flavor and why I can't find anything quite like that in New York? And I also get the feeling that it's not too sweet.
Is it something that is made at the university?
Yes, that's correct. The university has a full-size operating creamery, which actually was just expanded to about three times its earlier size, which supplies dairy products to the campus and also sells ice cream through outlets on campus itself.
Do you have special tricks as
there
to make yours better?
To the quality of that ice cream. Well, there are three, really. One is the fact that there are some pretty good ice cream scientists around there.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is that the ice cream, the ingredients that go into the ice cream are very fresh. The manager of the creamery is fond of saying that the ice cream which is being sold in the creamery 2 days ago was grass.
Uh-huh.
Before the cows ate it. The third is the fact that the ice cream itself is sold fresh. It's usually sold within a few days of when it's made. Therefore, it has not been exposed to this temperature abuse that I talked about earlier and hasn't had a chance for the ice crystals to grow and take away from the smoothness.
Now he also
very high quality ingredients and flavors are also used.
He also said that it doesn't taste as sweet. How important is sugar to the whole thing? Because if you keep sugar out of some baked products, they don't work as well, and there are a lot of people who don't want to have sugar or as much sugar in things as the recipes generally call for.
Well, that's correct. The sugar, the sweetness is a very major element of the flavor profile of ice cream, generally equivalent to something like 15% of table sugar in it. The creamery, by the way, Robert, if you're still listening, has a no-sugar-added product, which also tastes very good.
How do you do that? Because there are diabetics who are probably concerned about...
Well, there are the same things that are involved in sugar-free candies and other baked goods and things like that. They're called sugar alcohols. Things like sorbitol and maltitol supply the sweetness, but they're not metabolized the same way as sugar and are not considered as sugar.
Would fruit juices used as sweeteners work as well?
No. Well, they would work as sweetness. They don't. There's not usually as much sweet as much sugar in those. But the sugar that is in the fruit juices is a sugar, so it doesn't have that. It doesn't have the appeal of being a non-sugar. If you're concerned about that,
Leslie from New Haven, Connecticut. Hi, you're on. Please explain.
I wonder if you could explain something about non-fat ice cream. I'm amazed at the quality of it, especially the creaminess of some of the non-fat ice creams. I recently taste-tested them with my brother, who only eats premium ice cream, and he selected the Turkey Hill fat-free, sugar-free ice cream as being the Häagen-Dazs. So how do they do it?
Well, the fat-free products are, as the name implies, of course, leave out the fat. And so there must be, it's required then to supply that creaminess that we normally associate with the fat from something else. Some of these stabilizer ingredients, which tend to thicken the water, make it perceived more creamy. Another major factor in achieving the perception of creaminess is to have the air whipped into very tiny bubbles. And if we get very small air bubbles in the ice cream, then those air bubbles themselves are sort of perceived as the little spherical particles of fat. And this process that is used to make the slow churn product that Leonard was talking about earlier is very, very useful in making a no-fat product. The no-fat products that are made using this product are superior to the previous versions of the no-fat.
Can you tell us about the grainy, sandy problem that some ice creams seem to have? Is that simply that they've been frozen and defrosted and frozen and defrosted a couple of times?
Yeah, that's one reason for it. And if it's icy and if that coarseness goes away immediately as the ice cream melts and is no longer gritty, then it is a result of the sugar crystallization. But it is also a characteristic of the lactose, which is the natural milk sugar, which is brought into the ice cream via the dairy ingredients, which is has a very low solubility. And under the conditions that ice cream is frozen, that lactose can, under certain conditions, crystallize. And when it does, it's very, very gritty, and it persists after the ice cream melts. It doesn't redissolve. And so that's a defect which is referred to in the industry as sandy, very descriptive term.
Dr. Tharp, thank you so much for talking with us today on Please Explain. Dr. Bruce Tharp holds a doctorate in dairy science, is an adjunct professor in the Department of Food Science at Penn State University. It's been a lot of fun.
I've enjoyed it.
Bon appétit.